What's your name?
Devin.
The Routiers were a typical family. Darley was viewed by those who knew her as a very doting mother. The Routiers seemed to have everything until one night in June of 1996.
When I went to sleep, everything was perfect. When I woke up, it's been a nightmare ever since.
What woke you up?
My little boy, Damon. He was pressing on my shoulder, and he was saying, "Mommy."
Darley has always maintained that there was a man in the house that night.
Darley says that strange man attacked her.
I could see, like, the outline of a man that was going through the end of the living area into the kitchen. There was a sound of glass breaking. I stood up and I started to walk to the kitchen. And there was a knife laying down on the ground right outside the utility room. I picked it up. It was just like an instinct. And at that time, I could see Devin laying face up. And I flipped on the lights, and I remember screaming and screaming for Darren.
I run down the stairs, and she meets me at the bottom of the stairs. She was trying to tell me that Devin is hurt. Devin. I mean, she just, the look on her face is just startling.
911, what is your emergency?
Somebody's hit me.
Ma'am?
What?
Police spent much of the day meticulously investigating the crime scene.
When the police were there, they saw a cut screen in the garage, which seems to indicate that someone cut the screen from the outside, stepped through the screen, and headed for the main part of the house. And they found bloody footprints on the kitchen floor, broken glass, bloody fingerprints, and blood everywhere.
She said that she had fought off the attack. The only description of the attacker was a white male wearing dark clothing.
About a week after the murders, on June 14th, the Routiers hold a birthday party at the cemetery for Devin, who would have turned 7 that day. And a local television station went out and caught it.
Happy birthday to you.
They sprayed silly string, which took maybe 20 seconds. They sang happy birthday. And you hear Darley and Darren both sing.
Love you, Devin and Damon.
Even though we're sad because Devin and Damon aren't here, we try to hang on to what we can to get us through these times.
And I recall how shocked I was at the sight of that. And I wasn't the only one who was shocked.
I was really taken aback by her demeanor. I tell you, as a parent, I found it disgusting.
So a couple of days after the birthday party, we get a phone call. We need y'all to come up to the station. We hopped in the car, we ran up there, and we were excited that they were getting close to catching who did this.
At approximately 10:20 p.m. this evening, investigators from the Rowlett Police Department arrested Darley Routier. We believe that the white male suspect described by Darley Routier as the man that attacked her and murdered her children never existed. We also believe that the wounds present on Darley Routier were self-inflicted.
I swear I did not murder my children, I swear.
Okay, this is part 3 of Darley. I just want to tell everyone that our mini-series is no longer a mini-series because I think by the time, I haven't even counted them, but by the time we're done, I bet we're looking at 12 episodes because I did not take into account the discussion of guilty and not guilty.
Heated discussion. In fact, maybe you should apologize also for
your behavior
yesterday.
I ain't apologizing for nothing. They need to put the needle in her arm, and she needs to go away. Anyway, I'm Sherry. This is Outline of a Murder.
I'm Mom.
What a great way to start off this episode.
Almost want to use my first name so they wouldn't know who I was.
Okay.
Yesterday.
I have done this drink. Mm-hmm. And it's called a batidos. And so it's actually from Ecuador. I'm from New Mexico, so I wanted to do something that, you know, mm-hmm. was Latino. And so let me know what you think, Mom.
An American milkshake.
Yeah, it's
Latin
like, it's
American.
Like our version of an American milkshake.
No, needed more strawberries or something. Oh, you like it? Yeah, maybe the dogs like it.
I need some sweetener. Can you get me a sweetener?
Sure.
Yeah, this isn't. Yeah, sugar definitely needed to be added to our drink. I think if there's some sweetener, I think it would be good. So, yes. I will. Okay. Now let's not get distracted. Oh, I've got cabinet doors open.
After
I got a mess.
Get your sweetener.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, so I'm gonna you stir it. Mm-hmm. All right, let me try it again. Much better.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it's real simple. So it's almond milk, fruit of your choice. I did strawberries, frozen strawberries, and then half a teaspoon of vanilla. Definitely add some sugar or some sweetener, and it's really yummy.
How much milk?
3/4 of a cup. Cup of
per
fruit.
Per person?
Well, for our thing. Yeah. So if you added sugar, I mean, it might be good.
I'm good.
So you're not going to make it better, my drink? Fine, whatever. Okay, moving on. Okay, so where we started last week was a very heated ending on my part.
Uh-huh.
Of the defense or the evidence for her guilt. I highly recommend if you've not listened to part one and two. In part one, we go through the evidence for innocence.
Uh-huh.
Part two, we went through the evidence of guilt. Now we're going to look at the different versions. We're also going to look a little bit at her testimony. But I have in my notes here, there's a certain page. It's called Hub Pages. And I'll have the information in our show notes. But it's called The Disputed Conviction of Darlie Lynn Routier. And so it goes into, you know, the case and the different pleas and appeals to the Texas court. The last known appeal was for reexamination of physical evidence, and it was filed by her current and longtime appellate attorney, Stephen Cooper. It was accepted by State District Judge Gracie Lewis in 2018, requesting an updated forensic DNA testing of the evidence. Well, we talked about how in 2015, per a 2008 court order, they retested her DNA and all of it came back to her or the boys. So I'm not sure what any other testing is going to do, but they did submit the samples from the nightshirt that Darlie wore, also fingerprints on the knife blade handle, a swab from the sweatband of a cap, and then two saliva swabs from Darlie, and then a sample from the sock that was found 75 yards away.
You know, the knife that cut the screen that was put back, I wonder if they tested that for fingerprints, too. I'm sure they did,
I don't know.
Right?
It doesn't say that they did. Oh. But so like we talked about the last time, in 2015, all the DNA belonged to her and the children. Well, what they're saying is that we've had such advances in DNA that if there's like touch DNA or if there's, you know, even just a little tiny bit that might prove that she's innocent. I think it's crap. I don't think they're going to find anything.
I don't think so either.
And and really, it just keeps coming back to her. And people need to know that. So I'm looking through this to see, because, you know, the fact is that we are armchair people, right? We're not professionals. Mm-hmm. We're not conducting any of the investigations. We don't even understand maybe some of the science behind stuff. Mm-hmm. But the 911 call, which we read a few things, lasted 5 minutes and 31 seconds. So we went over, you know, whether she would have enough time to drop off the socks. So we kind of hopefully put that to bed for people.
You tested it and ran.
I did.
That distance. And you went even slower. Yeah. And yeah. She could still make it.
Yeah. So we definitely had, you know, a little bit of some data on that. We also talked about the shocking scene and the screaming. Darlie had a towel on her, but she did not get one for the boys, especially Damon, who was still alive. Let's see if there's anything else that I wanted to pick out. Okay, so the six-month-old Drake was in his crib.
He'd be in his 30s, wouldn't he?
Probably.
Because it's been almost 30 years?
Yeah.
Or 32?
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't see anything here that is anything that we've not already discussed. So I just wanted to make sure that I had all of that. Another thing that they thought was kind of strange is none of her jewelry was taken. She was known for wearing a lot of jewelry, and it was all on the kitchen counter, and it wasn't taken.
Oh, so, it was?
Yeah. So that means it could not be a burglary, and it also means then that the sole motive of whoever entered the house was to kill whoever was in the house.
And I think statistically,
very rare.
They don't kill children if it's a burglary.
Yeah, it's very rare. Mm. And then I wanted to show you this diagram here on the computer or on my iPad because it shows where all Damon's blood is. He's the one that moved around the most because, remember, he didn't die until the paramedics got here. And then Darren's is in the yellow. So his is pretty much isolated to where he was killed. The rest is Darlie's. So this is a map of the blood that they found, and all of it matches her and the boys. So you can see that she had a lot of movement, and so did Damon. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I just wanted to show that, and I'll have, again, this link in our show notes to Hub Pages. It's a very in-depth article. It seems to be neutral.
Look how much Damon had.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's so sad.
Yeah. Yeah,
wait a minute. If that's the back door, why is his blood back there?
Well, no, that wouldn't be the back door, but because it was on the knife. Oh. But you can see on this map the blood of Devin is pretty much isolated because he died immediately. And then you have Damon moving, but also remember she did that last stab.
Oh, yeah. And that's in his back.
And it's apparent. So, like, if we look again, it's apparent that she's doing all this running around, right? And then she's bleeding a lot in the kitchen area, probably because she's staging the scene. But we also see her going over here, right? So she goes to the sink, which she says she did not go to the sink. Remember that?
Yeah.
So her blood is all over the sink. Very little blood is going to the utility room. So what this shows is where she concentrated most of her efforts. And it also shows that if she stabbed Damon over here on the wall where he was discovered, after she stabbed him, his blood is dripping all over the place as she moves around.
Yeah. And as far as the sink goes, it showed someone had sprayed it down.
Yep.
But didn't you say that could be chemicals too?
No.
Okay.
That was a different case. No. Mm. She definitely bled out in the sink because that's where I believe she cut her own throat and stabbed herself. And then, like, here's an example of inaccurate information, he said. She goes, "How could I have done these things to myself? My neck was cut from ear to ear." And so the guy's like, "Well, that's hardly the case because it's a 3.5-inch laceration, which was defined as superficial, like we discussed. It was not life-threatening. Yes, it was close to the carotid arteries, but they're close to the surface. She said that she had to go into surgery to have her necklace removed. That's 100% false. So you can see that, you know, they're talking about some of the stories that she said and the reality of what really happened. And so this article is just absolutely fantastic, and it very objectively goes through all of the information. So I highly recommend it. Hub Pages, State of the, Texas versus Darlee Routier, A Clear Case of Guilt, and I will have that in the show notes. So on that note of her lies and the fact that the blood evidence shows that she was all over the place dripping her blood and Damon's, let's talk about the six different versions that she gave as well. Because even if you have trauma, your story is going to pretty much be consistent.
Yeah.
You may remember a couple things you're not aware of due to the trauma, but your story doesn't change. So if you remember a couple things, it adds to. I have heard of things where it's like, well, that's a little bit weird. People need to understand that your memory is fluid, and so we can actually change our own memories by reframing them, thinking of the situation in a different way, thinking of stuff that never, ever happened. We can do that. People don't realize how fluid it is. If you, like, let's say you go through a painful experience, and I do this a lot with coaching, and then you're sitting down and you're sharing that experience with a good friend or someone that you trust. So it could be a professional as well, or maybe a spouse, and you're sharing this trauma. By them communicating verbally and non-verbally that they understand, you're actually rewiring that memory, and now you're placing it in a positive context. So what happens is it no longer bothers you. There's no sting. And that's why I'm a huge proponent of coaching and having people help you, because just talking can reframe the whole thing.
I believe it. You know that saying, if you think it enough or lie enough about something, you actually believe what you're saying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the first thing is Darlee testified in court that Damon woke her up on the couch, pulling on her nightshirt, saying, "Mommy, mommy, mommy." Then she said she looked over and saw a man walking away through the kitchen going toward the utility room. Then she told her second story to her friends Barbara and Karen, as well as two nurses at the hospital, that she heard Damon going, "Mommy, mommy, mommy," and she felt pressure on her legs. She said that when she opened her eyes, a man was swinging a knife straight down at her throat. And she further said if she hadn't put her arm up, he would have killed her. Now, she did not mention this in her trial testimony. I think this story was created to explain the bruise. So she had to have a bruise to go with this story.
But if you slash in a knife, that would cut you.
She had those defensive
wounds. Yeah, that would cut you.
Then her third story is she told Rowlett police officer Matt Walling, and then later Barbara a second time, that she woke up to an intruder sitting on her legs and added, "He was rubbing a knife blade on my face." Again, she did not share this story in trial testimony. In Darlee's written statement to police 2 days after the murders, she never mentions anything about Damon saying, "Mommy, mommy, mommy." She says instead she woke up to Damon pushing on her shoulder and crying. Her fifth story that she told Darren is that she first woke up from the weight of an intruder sitting on her legs on the couch, where she had a brief struggle with him. In this initial version, there is no mention of Damon tapping her shoulder or saying, "Mommy, mommy, mommy," or a man rubbing a knife blade on her face, as she told Officer Matt Walling and Barbara. Darren passed this version of her story on to Child Protective Services worker Jamie Johnson when she interviewed him. Now, here's where this is important on the knife cut on her throat. So if she is laying down and an intruder is sitting on her legs and she's fighting him off, that would tell me probably that she is on her back. Now, she could be on her side. I could see someone sitting on the legs on the side and her twisting to try to fight off any knife attack. But it sounds like, from what she's saying, that she was on her back. So when I did my experiments with my ex-husband with the knife, it would still be, so like if she was on her side, because where the couch was, if she was laying on the left side, because the blood dripped that way, the majority, right? So if she was on her left side, her face was facing the back of the couch.
Yeah.
It was very awkward with the knife to attack her throat like this. So instinct, I naturally did it. I switched it to like this, and I'm like, I would go up. And of course, this isn't a science. I was just trying to figure out how does she have this diagonal wound. So if the knife goes up, it's a straight cut. It's not diagonal.
If she was on her side, right?
Yeah. And if she was in the front, I could see it being diagonal. But, so I could see the knife being held like this going across her throat. But again, most people, where their throats are cut, it's ear to ear. And typically, it almost decapitates them. Now, of course, she's fighting, she says, but there's no knife wounds on her arms, on her hands. I can't think of any case where there's not defensive wounds with a knife. Usually the only time you don't see defensive wounds is if you're asleep. That would probably require her to be stabbed immediately in the heart so that she didn't scream or didn't fight back. Then the sixth story is her 2020 prison interview. So this was Death Row's Women with Susanna Reed, season 1, episode 1. She stated that she spoke up, no reason given, no reason given as to what woke her up, and saw a man going into the utility room. So like her other versions of what happened, she didn't mention an intruder sitting on her legs. There was no mention of Damon waking her up. There was no mention of fighting the intruder at the end of the bar. There was no mention of chasing the intruder out to the garage. And there was no mention of an intruder cutting her with a knife on the couch. So after 24 years, she's still changing her story.
What is it now? Oh, that
was the last one that I know.
But you know, I don't think anybody, if you saw your kids, if an intruder was there and they were dead, would you really be going and chasing the intruder? Wouldn't you go to the children?
Well, I would, but you said yesterday that you don't ever know what you would do in that situation.
You don't know. Yeah.
I would immediately go for my kids. Mm-hmm. I'd be screaming my head off, and I would be checking on my infant upstairs.
Yeah.
And my husband. So now she also has 4 different versions of fighting the intruder.
Oh.
She told Officer David Waddell that she fought with the intruder at the end of the kitchen bar that was facing the family room. So if we go back to the photos, because like I said, the house is up for sale.
Wonder how long it's been up for sale. Did someone move into it, or it's just...
I have no idea. But if she goes... So this is the living room. Mm-hmm. If you go into there, she's saying that she was fighting the intruder closest to the family area.
Oh, okay.
And little Damon was right here when they found him. So terrible. It was this end. So that's the utility room. It was this end closest to the place where they were sleeping. She also, her second story is she told Officer Matt Walling that she fought with the intruder at the couch while she was still laying on it. Her third story was a formal written statement to police dated June 6. She never once mentioned fighting any intruder. Now, that's important because remember, June 6 is the night all this happened.
Oh, yeah. So it would be fresh in your mind.
Exactly. She states that Damon woke her up. She saw a man standing at her feet, that he walked past her through the kitchen, through the utility room, and out through the garage.
I would think you'd just lay there.
And not
check on your kids.
if he was at the foot, why didn't he finish her off?
Right.
And not only that, why didn't he go after her first and then the children? Mm-hmm. Because you want to get rid of the biggest threat.
The strongest threat, yeah.
Her fourth and final version of Finding the Intruder is on the 911 tape. And remember, we read parts of it. She told dispatcher Doris Tramwell that she fought with the intruder, but didn't say where. She said, "I was fighting." But in court, that was a big deal. They kept playing that tape, so they had a transcript of what originally they thought it said, you know, because they'll always do the transcript of the 911 right. call. Mm-hmm. It said fighting. Well, her lawyers were like, "No, she said, I was frightening."
Oh, my gosh.
So they
don't even believe her.
Yeah, so they were having them listen to the 911 call without the transcript. Then they had them listen to it with the transcript where they replaced the word fighting with frightening. No one uses the word frightening.
No.
Because that's not how it's
people
used.
People talk. You're scared.
Yeah. So it makes no sense
at all.
Doesn't make
sense.
She said, "I was fighting." And, of course, we've got the blood in the kitchen and the living room. So there's two different versions about her standing at the kitchen sink. She initially told police investigators, like we've discussed, that she never stood at the kitchen sink despite her blood being found on it.
Quite a bit of blood,
and
too.
Around it. That one side of the sink was mm-hmm. blue.
Yeah.
And that's why they think she sprayed it.
And we could see one part, there was blood. You could see.
On the front.
And it was hers on the front of the sink.
And then
sink.
All the drops on the floor around the rug, the two footprints. So obviously the luminol, you know, exposed that lie. And there was a puddle of her blood on. So basically what they think happened is there was a puddle of her blood drops, right? And then on top of those blood drops, there were more. So what that means is that she stood there for some time. Like, it wasn't she, you know,
was
going back and forth. She stood there. So what I believe is that's where she was stabbing herself. That's where she cut her throat. And then after she did her throat, she stabbed herself here and then in her right arm to make it look like she had been stabbed by an intruder.
I really don't understand if her whole defense is that she was attacked, why you would clean your blood out of the sink. You could just say, "I was over the sink,
because
it was dripping."
Because she couldn't be. I know. Well, she's not necessarily the brightest bulb in the batch, right?
Right.
But, right. I mean, you could literally say, "I went over to the kitchen sink to get some towels." And that probably would have been a better story than saying you never...
Were there. But there's blood there that people
Tons.
Can see. And then blood that was cleaned up.
Yep. And I showed you the picture.
Yeah,
the dominant
there was a
amount
lot.
Of her blood is over there. It's not on the couch. The dominant amount of her blood is over by the sink. So if she had been stabbed at the couch. Dominant blood would be there. It's not.
And her neck. She probably did it at the sink.
I do.
You're right.
I think that's where she did it.
Mm-hmm.
And then later she said when police physically removed the sink from the house to test it, Darlie suddenly remembered on the same day they remove it, and most likely at the advice of counsel, that she was in front of the sink wetting towels to place on the boys. But like we proved, there were no towels.
No wet towels.
Nope. The only towel, which you'll see in the crime scene photo of Devin's area, is one white towel. Mm-hmm. It's dry, and it has her blood. So here's an excerpt from Darlie's arrest warrant referencing both the sink and the couch. So this is a quote. "Darlie has never mentioned to us being near the kitchen sink, which is on the west wall of the kitchen, during or after the offense. The physical evidence investigators examined that area and determined that there had been significant amounts of blood shed immediately in front of the sink. Although attempts had been made to clean the counter, top, and sink, tests with luminol revealed blood on the top of the counter in front of the sink and on the floors. Neighbors, Crone, other officers, and I have all examined the couch where Darlie said she was sleeping when she was attacked. Although there are quantities of blood throughout the room and around the boys, there was no appreciable blood on the couch where Darlie's head, neck, and shoulders were located at the time she says she was stabbed by her assailant. Our opinion from this blood evidence is that Darlie self-inflicted her wounds while standing at the kitchen sink.
That makes sense. Most of the blood is there. Yeah.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Because you know for a fact it's going to be on the couch if that's where she was attacked.
And do you have the couch picture?
I do.
I'm going to look at that
and
again.
And don't forget that there was cast off on her t-shirt.
Oh, yeah.
That was Devin's. Cast off. I mean, I want people to picture that scene. This is a mother that is raising her knife over her head to plunge it 4 times into her child.
I want
people to take in that image because that's exactly what happened.
Okay, must I be know you that. Have it.
Oh yeah, I got it. I was hoping it wasn't with the autopsy photos because that's disturbing.
There it is.
Well, that was a different.
Oh, okay.
So let me get the right one.
It's hardly any blood
there. So
that's
where her head was. Yeah.
No, I can't see by the towel. There's a towel of blood, but.
No, that's a pillow.
Or is it?
No, you might be right.
I can't tell.
Because the pillow is important, too. That's Damon's blood. I think it's a pillow, which...
Looks like a pillow.
We might...
See
yeah, because...
It does.
The blood on the couch and the pillow is what the Darlie supporters contend proves she was telling the truth. But that's not what she first reported.
No, and these arrows where they found blood...
It was Damon's, by the way.
Oh, there's hardly any blood on the couch.
She wiped it off.
On the arm part.
She wiped it off. The couch is one of the places where they found his palm print. Oh. So it was on the floor and it was over here.
Ugh.
I don't want to talk about Damon too much because that's when I can feel the anger and my heart starts beating fast because it's just so vicious. But that's not what she first reported. She said that she fought the intruder at the end of the kitchen bar. So even if her supporters want to say, well, that's where it happened, Darlie didn't say that till later. And then there was no blood cast off on the couch suggesting a struggle. No individual drops were found, just smears of Darlie's blood. So she was probably going around. I mean, you saw all the exits.
Right.
She was all over the place. And so she was doing things trying to stage the scene.
And she said she was attacked on the couch, one of her stories.
Yep. That was one of her versions.
Then
and then later it was
to
on
the kitchen.
Well,
when they found
luminol
so much blood.
Testing on the side of that couch revealed Damon's handprint that she had wiped off.
Because.
Well,
it would be the narrative of the story that she was telling.
Mm-hmm.
It's terrible.
Yeah, it's pretty awful.
Yeah, that is a pillow. I can tell.
Yeah,
now.
It's a pillow. Mm-hmm. Okay, now, although it's, I feel like Brent on the prosecutor, or Brett on the prosecutors.
I'll have to listen to that.
He gets heated, and so it's pretty plain what I think. I don't see any evidence that supports her story whatsoever. So my verdict is she is 100% guilty. Where are you? Because I know you started out kind of like maybe
on the fence.
Innocence or on the fence like I was until I investigated this case.
I was till yesterday.
So
guilty, definitely.
And what was it for you that it just sealed it?
The sink and the blood.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I would love to hear
because
our listeners' thoughts too.
If you didn't cut yourself there, there'd be more blood over here where the boys were. Not in the sink.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the sink got
Well,
many things, but that was the main
thing.
And
why would you clean up the sink?
Exactly.
If you're a victim, You don't clean up the sink because there'd be blood evidence. Yep. You would, of course, have to have blood there. Don't forget the wine glass was broken on top of blood. And then I'm with you, like on the vacuum, they said it was carefully laid over, like mm-hmm. it wasn't like a struggle. I could see her just tipping it over to mm-hmm. stage it.
Yeah.
But I could also see in the struggle maybe it falling that way as well.
It could.
Yeah, it could have. So yeah. That's not as big of a deal to me.
No, but she did stage.
Mm-hmm. She did.
So.
Now, what do you think the motive was? Because obviously it wasn't money.
I don't know. And I have no idea. I know they were going on a trip, but they had three kids.
Mm-hmm.
So I have not a clue.
Okay, so I'm going to give my thoughts on what the possible motive was.
Okay.
Okay.
I'd like to hear.
So Darren and Darlie, at this point in their life, they were living the American dream, right? His business TestNet made them a bunch of money fast. And Darlie's Rolex, diamond rings, all the jewelry she piled on every day were on the kitchen. So we mm-hmm. know it couldn't have been burglary. They bought their huge house. They filled it with brand new furniture. They bought an SUV, a Jaguar, a 30-foot cabin cruiser, a fountain in the yard, and a $9,000 Redwood spa in the backyard, complete with a hot tub, TV, bar, and stereo system. Now, what I'm doing is I have no problem people doing that. It's not my place to judge.
No.
But what I am saying is there a young couple with young kids and they're making immature choices. So if you think ahead, you might realize, okay, the money I'm making, let's have a plan for the future. You know, let's have our emergency savings. Let's be frugal with money. Let's be careful with money. Yes, buy some things we enjoy, but that's after you have provision for the future. Instead, what they did is they just blew it. They just blew all their money. They never had their savings. They never had that.
I read somewhere that they were very in debt at the time of this.
So when this happened, the business started to level out. And Darren, his contract work decreased, but their spending didn't. Mm. So that's where the debt comes in. Mm. Darlie started having bouts of depression after Drake was born. And that's the infant. She had gained weight and she was stressed over the finances. She was taking depression medication prescribed by her doctor. And then a diary entry on May 3rd, a month and 3 days before the murder, stated that she hoped her boys would forgive her for what she was about to do.
Oh.
She said, quote, "My life has been such a hard fight for a long time, and I just can't find the strength to keep fighting anymore." A close friend testified about the depression in court, and other friends noticed she was not her usual self. She said that she was tired of arguing over money with Darren. She also seemed more aggravated with the kids.
But that also sounds like a suicide note.
Maybe.
To me.
It could go either way.
It could go either way.
She's either planning on killing them,
or
she was going to commit suicide and hope they could forgive her. I wondered if she had postpartum.
That's what I was just going to ask you. I wonder if she did since the baby.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
But back then, though, that wasn't really a thing.
No, it wasn't. Andrea Yates, the one that drowned all her boys, started all of the... She is the best example of postpartum.
Yeah.
I think it's crappy what she did, but that woman was out of her mind. What makes me mad about her and her husband is the doctor warned both of them, do not have any more children. You are not going to be able to handle it because, you know, that would happen every time. Awesome.
I love my clock.
So anyway.
Well, and also, a lot of people were angry at him because the doctor had told him not to have kids. And then he later stated, you know, well, I knew she was acting funny and real depressed. And then you leave her with the kids. Yep. But Yeah.
So I think both of them are crappy for that.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. Normally with postpartum, the murderer is very passive. So what that means is if you look at Andrea Yates, she drowned them, which is more passive than stabbing your child with fury mm-hmm. in the chest, okay? Mm-hmm. Then if you look at, was it Susan Rice or she's the one that put her kids in the car seat. And just let it roll into the
yeah,
lake.
Yeah, but she did that because she was in love for a boyfriend.
No, I know, but it was more passive.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's pretty darn rare in postpartum where a mother actively stabs her children. Even a gun. And I know it's like, well, all of that's violent. I get that. But a knife is so personal and typically rage-filled versus shooting someone because you're depressed and then yourself, that's common, or the water situation. So, but I do think there was some postpartum.
Because it is a real thing, but back then when this happened, it wasn't even, I mean, it just didn't happen.
No.
No one believed it. It was even a thing.
And I think
when it came out,
if she had that, and then they're having the financial troubles, the life she loves, because she was very materialistic, so the life she loved was being threatened. Okay,
but there was no money.
Well, I have an opinion on that.
Oh, okay.
Of what the purpose was. So when investigators went to Darren's office, you know, his business office, it was unoccupied and seemed to have been closed for a while.
Oh, I wonder if she knew.
On May 9th, they received a letter from American Express demanding, really? Can you put your phone on silent? Yes. American Express demanding an immediate payment of $1,000. On May 23rd, they received a notice of foreclosure on their house. Ugh. They had, get this, over $200,000 of personal debt. They had been turned down for a $5,000 loan that Darren applied for at Bank One on June 1st. Darren said it was for a family vacation. Later, he said it was to buy a pickup for Darlie's sister. They owed $10,000 in back taxes. The Jaguar was broken down along with the cabin cruiser, and they didn't have any money to fix it. Now, it still doesn't explain why she didn't go after Darren to get the $800,000 and why she went after the kids. But I wanted to reveal the state of mind, right? This is their life.
Go ahead.
It's, you know, the latest he tried to get money was June 1st. They're dead 5 days later. So they have all of this financial pressure. And I remember when we only had $56,000 of unsecured debt, we could barely pay our bills. I didn't know how we were going to eat. And it was stressful, for sure. I can't imagine.
No.
$200,000.
And also, she may not have gone after him because the baby was upstairs, and that'd be obvious the wife did it when you kill a husband. You know, someone in the house.
I actually think she loved him, actually.
You do?
I do.
Can someone like that really love, though?
I don't know. But her version of it, because, you know, psychopaths, they have their people. So I don't know if it's a love as much as it's that's their people.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that make sense?
That makes sense, yeah.
Then Barbara, one of her friends, stated in a YouTube interview that Darlie and Darren had been fighting every day for weeks over money. Darlie had supposedly told her housekeeper the day of the murders that there was going to be a big fight that night. And supposedly, Darlie told Darren she wanted a divorce. We can't confirm any of this, but if true, it adds to her emotional state. Which, so if it is true...
I don't think that no one would ever admit that, though.
So do you think, well, that was her friend, though. I could see her talking to her friend about it. But do you think that, okay, I mean, she could still love him, but recognize this isn't working. Or if you're correct and she didn't love him, but it would be too obvious of a murder.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking. And who would kill their children like that?
Her.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying, you kill a husband, it's sort of a given that you know.
Yeah.
But you kill your children.
But there was supposedly no monetary advantage. In fact, it cost them $4,000 more than the insurance.
Yeah.
So.
But when you stage a murder or an intruder and a theft, you have to make sure you take your jewelry off the counter.
Right.
And don't wash up the blood.
Right. Yeah. So, here are my thoughts. I know I keep saying so. I apologize. Whether they fought that night or divorce was a discussion, I believe that Darlie at this point was an extremely angry and narcissistic mm-hmm. person who decided to kill her two boys, but I don't believe it was about life insurance. I do believe she was depressed. I do believe there was postpartum. I'd like to know how she interacted with the baby. Was she loving? Was Darren always taking care of the baby? Did she just let the baby stay in the crib? Like, was she detached or was she taking care of the baby? I don't know. I couldn't find anything on that, but I really would like to know that.
You know, they both were very materialistic.
They were. But as a mother, I remember being depressed after Kent. You know, I'm young. I don't know what postpartum depression is.
Right.
I don't have any sleep. He developed colic really early. It was a really tough time. But there was no way my son was going to sleep in another room without me there. We had him in a bassinet for the first few months. Mm-hmm. And then once I felt comfortable, we moved him into the other room and had his little monitor so I could hear him. So the fact that she's sleeping downstairs, maybe moms do that. You know, every mom's different. But I would not be downstairs and my infant upstairs.
Now, well, the baby was with Darren.
Yeah. Now, I remember nights where I'm like, Mike, I cannot get up. I'm so exhausted. So he would, but that was rare.
I'd like to know, too, even the listeners can maybe answer this, but I have never heard of anyone have life insurance on children that young. I don't know if it's common,
but remember I've the never Gerber heard baby? Of it. For the life insurance?
Yeah, the Gerber baby.
No, a lot of people get life insurance on their children when they're that young, in case anything happens.
Oh, okay.
But well. I didn't, but that was because we couldn't afford it. And I think it's more like, you know, SIDS, or if there's an accident, and just to cover. It's a very minimal amount just to cover funeral expenses.
Okay, makes sense. I just haven't heard anybody do that before.
But the fact that she slept downstairs for days and Darren and the infant were upstairs, that is weird to me. I could see one night you're like, I need a break. Yeah. I'll sleep down here with the boys just so we can get some rest. But days that infant was upstairs with Darren.
Well, and their marriage was in trouble too.
It had to be.
You know, I know this probably doesn't matter, but I'm curious as when the life insurance policies were done. If they were done right before the murders, or they were had it before?
That's a good question.
Because if it was done before, or right before, a month or two before.
Mm-hmm. And obviously she can't do math because she didn't realize it'd be more.
Yeah, she wanted to be able to pay for the funerals.
Which even she couldn't do that right.
Yeah.
Cost her money. So I believe that she had been pondering it for a while, and that she was sleeping downstairs with them, working up the nerve to do it.
Mm.
She went to the kitchen, grabbed the butcher knife, or grabbed one of the knives. Well, no, she might have cut the screen before she attacked her children. Put that back.
Mm-hmm.
She gets the butcher knife.
Why would you put it back?
She gets a sock from the utility room or the family room. We know it was clean, so I'm thinking maybe it was in the laundry room.
Mm-hmm.
She went over, stabbed Devin first, who did fight back. She then stabbed Damon. She then ran out of the house, deposited the sock, and then returned. And the reason I believe she did that before she stabbed herself is there were none of her blood drops on the sock or the ground. So, you know, she'd mm-hmm. be running. Her blood would be everywhere.
Everywhere.
So she had to deposit the sock before she wounded herself. We know it was her because her skin cells were inside the sock at the toe end. Now, people might be like, well, that could have happened during laundry. Okay, I can get that. But if it was from putting her hand in there to pull the sock out to where it's the right side out, that could be a possibility. Mm-hmm. But then if the killer had the sock, her blood would need to be somewhere on the sock.
Yeah, yeah.
She returned to the house realizing, crap, I gotta wound myself. I can't do it with the sock. So she decided, okay, I'm going to do it with the same knife, but I'm going to let them know I touched the knife. So I believe that she cut her throat, her own throat, stabbed herself in the shoulder with her left hand, and then used her left hand to stab herself in the right forearm. She grabbed a towel and held it to her wound as she cleaned up the sink area by washing the blood down the drain and wiped the cabinets down. She noticed her footprints and tried to wipe those up. At some point, she realized that Damon was alive after she inflicted her own wounds. So she went over, stabbed him again in the back, as the blood evidence tells us, and then started screaming and dialed 911.
You know, I was just thinking the reason it was in the sink. So when you cut your neck, doesn't it spray? Wouldn't the drops be a telltale sign? And that's why she cleaned that sink out.
It can.
Because of the blood evidence would have shown.
Yeah.
You know the how they do, cast off, they do all those different things. Yep. It would have shown. Oh.
Now, what I want to do is we're not going to go through all of her testimony. but what do you think with my scenario? Do you think that's...
Oh, yeah, 100%.
You think that's what she did?
Yeah.
And, we could, there could be variations, of course. But reading her testimony is very interesting.
I'm surprised she got on the stand.
I'm not. Not at all. She would 100% do it because she thinks she's a master manipulator and she's smarter than everybody else.
Smarter. Mm-hmm.
So this is interesting. She's 27 at the time she's on trial. She was born in Altoona, Pennsylvania. And when she was 7, they moved to Lubbock, Texas.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. And then they went back to Pennsylvania. And then when they were 11, they moved again back to Lubbock.
They have family there?
I don't know. But I think that would be maybe a little bit difficult for a child going mm-hmm. back and forth.
You make friends and then have to move and...
She has two little sisters. Dana is 10 years younger, and then Danielle was 12 years younger. So she's significantly older. So she would be, it'd be a weird combination of she was the baby for a long time, and then all of a sudden she's not the baby. And she's the oldest. The two sisters are closer in age, like 2 years apart. They would probably be closer, and she'd almost be like a, I don't know.
Mother, almost.
Yeah.
Figure. I wonder if the parents divorced or if those are half-sisters.
I don't know. That's a good question. It could be. But, I don't know. She says that... it was herself, her mother, her father, and her two little sisters.
Oh, okay.
So she graduated from Lubbock, and it was when she was in high school in Lubbock that she met Darren. She was 15, and he was running or helping as an assistant manager at a place called Western Sizzler, a steakhouse in Lubbock.
I remember those.
And she said that she met him on Mother's Day, and she said, my mother kept telling me that this was a great guy that worked at Western Sizzler with her, and she brought me in, introduced me to him, and she said we hit it off, and they started dating. He's 2 years older than her.
Mm-hmm.
They then... got engaged in Purgatory, Colorado. Hello.
Oh, Purgatory.
Maybe a red flag?
Right.
They were on a ski lift when he asked her to marry him. And so they married after she got graduated high school. So all that to point out, she did not have her youth past high school.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Right.
And that's important. Like, I remember being that age, married, I have a young kid, and I remember thinking, man, am I missing out on anything? Like, if we would have waited or, because you're just young,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have traded Kent for anything, but I do remember feeling, man, I'm so young. I didn't mm-hmm. have the college experience. Mm-hmm. I didn't have all of that stuff. So they get married. And then they move to Rowlett. They open up their business. And she actually was like a co-equal in that business.
Oh.
She was super smart, believe it or not.
Not too smart.
She did a lot of work on the circuit board. So she definitely had some smarts. They expanded the business in 91. In 92, they moved into the building that they had. But for a while, they operated the business out of their apartment. She talked about when she was pregnant, that 2 days after they moved into their home, the pizza man shows up, and the real estate agent, I guess, showed up, and her water broke. So,
oh no.
Yeah. But the first son was born June 14th, 1989, Devin. So they got married in 88. So it was not long at all. before they had kids.
I think that's pretty common, though.
And then Damon came in 91.
Mm-hmm.
They moved to their new home in 93. They're still operating the business out of their home. And she talked about the different things they enjoyed doing with the boys and eating out and all of that. And then it was in 95 that she had the third child. So there was actually quite a bit of time. It makes me wonder, was he planned?
4 years, right?
Yeah. The other two were like year one, year two. I wonder if, you know, the little infant was surprised.
Or they were having trouble. Lots of women do that. Mm-hmm. If there's trouble in the marriage, they'll get pregnant.
Yeah. I didn't think about that.
To fix that, yeah.
They also start talking about her being depressed. So the lawyer, her lawyer says, all right, Darlie, there has been some testimony about you being having the blues or being moody or depressed. Tell the jury how you were feeling about this time. So this is after the third son was born. Are you talking about the incident in May? Remember what she wrote? He said, no, I'm talking about in April and then what led to the incident in May. Well, actually, I had quit breastfeeding Drake in March and I had started taking some diet pills. Had you gained some weight? Yes, I had gained not a great deal of weight, maybe 12 to 15 pounds to lose after Drake. And then he's like, well, did you lose it? Part of it? She said, yeah, I had lost almost all of it. And then he said, so you started taking diet pills? She said, yes, they were prescribed by the doctor. They were Pondamin and Fastin. And the reason I got on those particular pills was because I knew a lot of women that had been on the pills that had a very high success rate without, they didn't have a lot of side effects that I had been told that the older diet pills have. She said, they didn't make me feel irritable or jumpy, or the only thing I really felt from them is a dryness in my mouth. So you tend to drink a lot more water, but that's about it. I mean, I still ate. And then he asked her, okay, so did those pills alter your life? And she said, no. Your emotions or have any effect on you that you're aware of? No. That is why I took them, because they did not have those side effects. Okay, so in April and May, did you, in the first part of May, you were feeling a little bluesy or feeling depressed? Like, how were you feeling? She said, I guess you could say, I would say moody. Okay, tell the jury as best you can how you felt and what led up to the phone call to Darren on May the 3rd of 96. I'd been having a few days that were really rough. I was crying a lot. Well, usually I'm not a big crier. Are you pretty upbeat as a rule? Yes. I'm the person that looks at it as half full, and I didn't feel like that. I didn't like feeling like that. It really bothered me. And I started to write a letter, and I started to write the letter. I was reading it, and I realized that it was silly. I mean, I wasn't really serious or feeling that I really wanted to in my life. I'm very embarrassed. I'm very embarrassed to have to get up here and even tell you people about this part, but it is something. And so he said, well, you were writing in a journal and you didn't think anybody would ever read it. And she's like, right, private thoughts. She said, but I did attempt to take my life.
Oh, that's new.
May 3rd. So she calls Darren at work and said, you need to come home immediately. So we did. So there was a suicide attempt. And then she talked about having two dreams about death in the past several months. Both time I was hesitant to go, but when I did, it was such a wonderful feeling, one that you cannot describe. And both times I felt I was going to be with the Lord. I don't know what these dreams are telling me. I only know that I am yet ready to leave this. I am not yet ready to leave this wonderful life here.
I wonder what she used for a suicide attempt.
I don't know.
Because to kill someone with a knife and then cut yourself.
Very unusual.
Yeah.
Very unusual for a female.
I was curious.
I don't know how she tried, but she also said that her a family member molested her. It was like the stepfather. I guess he had fondled her, and that is part of the reason she was depressed. But she was definitely wanting to, she was fantasizing and pondering suicide. She even went on a tangent about how we have to show our children what is right or wrong. Well, I hope you did that. So then she said, I told him that I didn't like the way I was feeling the past couple days, that I didn't like crying and didn't understand why I was feeling the way I was feeling. I didn't like it. And I had started to write down in the journal, and Darren started to cry, and we cried a little while together, a couple of minutes. And Darren asked me how I was thinking about doing this when I said I thought about taking some pills when I was thinking about it, and like some sleeping pills.
Yeah.
And that's usually normal with women. But she said then she got her first menstrual cycle that she had not had for over a year, and she was fine.
Wow.
Yep, you perked up? Very much so, yes. Well, oh, so you seem to be your old self? Again? Yes, I wondered.
She probably thought she was pregnant again.
I wondered. So does that sound like postpartum, though, too? Like, you know, she had just had the baby. She's overweight.
Yeah, I think so. Does it to you? I don't know a lot about it. I haven't investigated it.
I wonder.
But I could see that.
How long it lasts. Like,
I don't know.
Do you have to get help?
I would think so. Some have lasted months, I'd heard.
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know
and
either.
Is it like Yates?
It is a long
she
time.
She had that, but had she had depression before?
Good
to
question.
Add to that.
It doesn't seem like Darlie did.
Didn't sound like it.
I wonder if she had postpartum with the other boys.
Oh, good question.
Doesn't yeah, maybe I can write in and that. Ask the killer, the child killer, if
yeah,
she did.
Yeah, maybe she'll write you back.
Now she starts saying that a car was seen the night of the murder. That it was she saw the tail end of a black car that was in the alley. And that it scooted out of there pretty quick. And that someone, I think it was a neighbor or friend, told that the person in the car was stopping in the alley looking at the garage. And the garage door was open. So this was in April and May.
Oh, it's open now?
Well, in April and May.
Oh, in April
they started
and
seeing
May.
Some
yeah.
unusual behavior. She said they also had received some telephone calls that were unusual, like a bunch of hang-up calls. They wouldn't say anything. So now she's trying to set up a scenario where someone is stalking the family or, you know.
Yeah, because I would think if you're going to kill somebody, you're not going to do all that. You're just going to go kill them.
Exactly.
Maybe stalk, you know, when they come home and all of that. But why would you, if you're going to kill them anyway, bother to make phone calls?
Well, I could see, like, you know, that one dude that we did the case on last season where he would call the family to torment them.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But that's
now,
sort of rare, I would think, right?
It does seem rare in all the cases and stuff we've watched. Then they talked about the gate, because the gate was a big deal. Because remember the backyard? So if the guy left through the window out the back gate, he would have had to have gone through the gate to get away.
Right.
But the gate was broke.
Oh.
And
so the gate was broke?
Yep. Now, she said, did the gate get fixed? Yes. He fixed it. I had a lady that had just been over the night before that had a Pomeranian, and I have a little Pomeranian. We were breeding the dogs or trying to breed the dogs, so I wanted to make sure that the gate was locked because the first time we had to breed them in the house, and dogs are animals, period, and are very funny about being around people when they're breeding, and they don't like to be around people, and they make a lot of racket, a lot of noise, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so you are going to put the dogs in the yard, and I assume you want to secure the gate. Yes, sir. So they couldn't get out. Right. I didn't want to be responsible for losing someone else's dog. And Darren was handling that chore that evening? Yes, sir. Okay, so did he complete it or advise you that he complete it? Yes. He later told me that he had fixed it. So it wasn't.
Hmm.
It wasn't fixed.
Did they bring that up, that it wasn't fixed, the prosecution?
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I'm sure. They also asked about the, you know, vacuum cleaner, why was it out? And she said, well, I had to do some vacuuming on the runners, you know, the runners right. that people had back in the day to protect the carpet, the high traffic areas. She said the boys had come in, they'd gotten some mud and dirt on their feet, and so she had the vacuum out to clean that up.
I'm not too worried about the vacuum, though.
Yeah, I'm not either.
Because it could fall like that. It could fall to the side. It could fall.
Yeah.
And she vacuumed. No.
And she said that night that Devin fell asleep in front of the TV and that Damon was laying there watching it, but he wasn't asleep yet. And so Darren came in Because I guess the baby was laying on her, and he came in and said, hey, you know, the baby's, or she said the baby was fussy. I gave him a bottle. And then Darren said he was going to take him upstairs and rock him. She said, I usually rock him every night and sing to him, but Darren said that he was going to do that and he wanted to watch the news. And I don't really like to watch the news.
Right.
So that's part of how they ended up in separate locations. Now, you can see in her testimony once she gets with, the prosecution, she gets
angry.
Yeah, her demeanor, of course, changes, but she gets a little smart aleck.
Yeah,
you know, situation.
But I wouldn't be doing that in front of a jury.
She mentioned, you know, how Damon was lying beside the couch, and he was laying there with his little kitten, and I was laying on the couch with Drake, and then, of course, he goes upstairs. There was also records that became disputed in the trial. So these right here, and then I think I have another picture of the couch right here.
Can you? Yeah.
These records become important because in the records were life insurance policies, all kinds of stuff that it looks like she was going through before she killed the boys. She said that they were personal records that they kept at the business that she brought to the house, that she wasn't looking around for anything, that she brought them back in March when she quit working at the business, that they were just her personal files, and that she had consulted a lawyer about estate planning, and that she just needed direction on how to divide up the estate if there was like some, you know, like if her and Darren were to die together. Mm-hmm. And she said there were a lot more papers in with all that stuff than what has been shown. So then he said, do you remember the green plastic container that was pointed out to the jury as a container in which you kept your sewing equipment? Yes, sir. Did you have any sewing equipment in there? No, sir. What was in that? It was all the files inside of that. And is that, were those papers that you brought home from the office? Yes, sir. Personal papers? Yes, sir. Just hadn't found a place for them in the house? No, I had actually been talking about getting a filing cabinet, and I didn't want just a regular plain filing cabinet in the middle of. I wanted a filing cabinet that looked like a piece of furniture.
Right.
So then she talks about the boat. She said Drake was born, and the boat had had a problem, and it was going to cost, I don't know, I think Darren had told me like $800 or something to get it fixed. He had just gotten an estimate from somebody, and we were discussing getting rid of the boat because we weren't going to use it anymore. So there was no argument. Well, no, what I was upset about was that a man had called me earlier and had pretty much, I mean, he was very rude and had cussed me out over the phone about something I didn't even know about. My husband's car was at his shop and he wanted my husband to come and pick it up. And he was very rude to me and I was upset. So they're just kind of going through all of what the prosecution is going to say were motives. And then she also talked about the gold pillow. She said that Damon was on the gold pillow down there by the couch and his head was on it and his feet were facing toward the couch, that he had a blue pillow and he was laying there with his little black kitten. And then she said, okay, so Darren went on upstairs to bed. And I said, yeah. And I asked him if he made sure the front door was locked and he said he did. He said, did you set your alarm? No, we never set our alarm. So she said that she watched TV briefly and then she curled up with her head towards the TV and her feet away and that they were all asleep. The next thing I remember is Damon hitting my right shoulder and he said, Mommy, I'm not sure. I looked up and you've got to remember that I am not completely awake. You know, when you first wake up, you're not completely wide awake and there's this man that's inches from the couch, going away from the couch, walking away from me. I started to get up and then I stood up. I heard noise like glass breaking. I started to walk toward the kitchen. Damon was behind me. I get to the kitchen. I put my hand here for Damon to stay. And when I got to the kitchen, I could see the man going into the utility room. We know that Damon was stabbed over here.
Yeah, yeah.
So it goes on and on. She talks about fighting him at the counter. She said, I went to the kitchen and flipped the lights on. I grabbed the phone. I went to the drawer where there's towels in the drawer. I went to the drawer and I went over to the sink and got the towels wet. We know that's a lie. You went over to the kitchen, you got the phone, and then what did you do? Well, I went to the kitchen, I got the phone, I went to the drawer, I got the towels, I went to the sink. Why did you get the towels? I just wanted to help stop the bleeding. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do. I was just reacting. So you got the towels. I got the towels, I went to the sink, I got the towels wet. All right, were you on the phone with 911? I think I was, yes. Do you know if you started, if you got the towels before you called 911, or you called 911 before you got the towels, or did it all happen at the same time? I mean, I got the towels. I was calling as I got the towels. All right. So after you got the towels wet, did you take those to Darren? I got a couple towels wet. I went to Damon first, and I put a towel on his back. Lie.
Mm-hmm.
She said that she also, that Darren was blowing into Devin's mouth. You could hear the wounds in his chest. I didn't know what to do. I just put a towel on his wound.
Yeah, but there's no towel with his blood on it.
Right. So she has to talk about the towels to explain the blood in the sink.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
So that's the whole purpose of the towels.
I'm sure prosecution had to have asked, well, how come none of the towels were wet?
Exactly. This is weird. Darren, and there was another, I think he was a paramedic, they tried to help me over to the stretcher, and when I stood up, Darren said something to me that my panties were gone. That's the first time that I realized that my panties were gone.
Hmm.
Well.
I would know.
Yeah.
I mean.
I think you would know if you're going commando.
If your panties are gone.
And where are they? Did, you know, like, did you take them off and you just didn't put them back on after a shower? I mean, what's up with the panties? So the only thing I can think of is she's trying to imply that the intruder was trying
to rape her.
To rape her. Mm-hmm. But we know that's not the case.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Oh, and the bruises, you know, they go into that. Oh, and then she said, okay, I'll ask you, Darlie, while you were there in the hospital, you realized anything unusual about the inside of your mouth? Yes, sir. What was that? My mouth was very sore. It felt kind of raw inside. Do you know what caused that? I don't know what caused it. I can tell you that. I can speculate. I can tell you what I think caused it. Well, what do you think caused it? I think that the man had his hand over my mouth while he was attacking me.
There
was no recollection.
No.
There was no hospital report that said that
there'd be DNA.
That. And then she also blamed a few people, a neighbor. I mean, she blamed a lot of people for killing her kids, told people, I know who it is. It's this man. And they were able to say without a shadow of a doubt that it wasn't.
You see neighborhoods who don't have your neighbors or friends going to kill your kids. That's rare. It can happen, but.
They were also trying to figure out, why do you have someone who comes and cleans the house and you feel the need to vacuum that same day?
Oh.
You know, so that was a big deal. So then she gave the story about the boys. They go back into the gate, and now the prosecution's like calling her bluff. And that she would have to lift the gate up to try to get it to open because it was not fixed. But there were a couple things.
Did she have an answer for that when they said that?
No. So then he goes, do you remember telling her that you thought about suicide, actually brought the over-the-counter pills, wrote the note, but you couldn't do it and you called your husband? Yes, sir. Okay, so you told her that you actually bought the over-the-counter pills. I had bought the over-the-counter pills. For what purpose of taking them? To commit suicide? No, sir. I did not buy the pills that day. If that is, I mean, what you're asking, I'm not sure. So you felt bad enough on the 3rd of May to write down and contemplate how you would kill yourself, write a note, and then decide to tell your husband? Yes, sir. Well, I guess you're not very happy with your life. Well, I was pretty depressed. Have you ever thought about committing suicide at any other time? No, sir. You said that you mentioned on your direct testimony that being molested by a stepfather. Stepfather, what's his name? Denny. Okay, and that happened when? How old were you? Well, I was 8. So when was the last time you saw him? Well, the last time I saw him, I believe, was on Mother's Day. He came over to pick up Danielle, my little sister. That's Mother's Day of this last year, right? Yes, sir. which would have been close to the murder. Well, I don't know, about 3 weeks. Well, it's in May, right? Well, Mother's Day, yes, sir. Okay. And in fact, on that day, you gave him Damon and Devin and let him go to their house for a couple of days.
What'd she say to that?
Yeah, she didn't have any reasoning. There was no way that she could clear that up.
Unless she knew her mom would be there to keep an eye, maybe.
So then he's like, okay, so we can put that issue aside. The murder of your children is not your husband. Yes, sir. Okay, so when it comes down to this, the murderer is either this man who crept into your house and murdered your children and attacked you, or you are the murderer. Sir, this has to be two ways, right? Sir, I did not murder my children. It's got to be one of two ways. I did not murder my children. So was this man who crept into your house? Yes, sir, it was. Okay, now at the time that this happened, did you feel stalked in any way? So he just goes through and she starts getting very agitated because he's like, it could only be one of two scenarios. So then he says, now apparently this man who crept into your house in the early morning hours of the 6th was able to murder your children, wound you, and leave the one witness that could put him on death row. Well, I think he thought I was dead. Okay, he left the one witness who could cause his conviction and put him on death row alive. Again, I think he thought I was dead. Well, you're not moving or something, right? Were you not?
Yeah, because she said she was chasing him or up in the kitchen.
I don't remember that much, sir.
That's so convenient.
So it just goes on and on. He goes like, so you say you're a light sleeper and yet you didn't hear your children being murdered? I mean, he just ripped her into shreds. He goes onto like the floor and, you know, do you think you could have slept through a man stabbing him 4 times in the back? I mean, he just ripped her to shreds. Mm. So I wanted to give some of the examples of her testimony so that people, and you can get it online. That's where I got it. I'll have the link in the show notes, but she is lying and she is changing her stories. So what I recommend for our listeners is to look at her testimony and ask yourself this question. This story is in response to a piece of evidence against me. So whatever her story is, look at that corresponding piece of evidence and you'll find why she had to make up that story. So the towels was because her blood was going to be everywhere.
Yeah.
Right? So that's how you can approach it. Whatever she's fabricating. So I believe she was in a rage that night. And
but what set her off?
I think it was the money. I think it was the finances. And I could be wrong, but I think she decided it was economically feasible, more feasible, to get rid of two boys and start fresh with her, Darren, and the infant.
Yeah, she could have been looking at, you know, all those files that are on there and getting madder by the minute and the minute and the minute. And
I don't think she liked being a mom. Mm. I think she was harsh with her boys. And I think she thought, okay, I'm going to go ahead and take them out. I don't think she ever thought to kill herself that night. I think she decided to get rid of them because she doesn't have a heart. And it's easier to feed one mouth, right, than it is three.
And witnesses did say she was not real nice to her kids.
Nope.
That's terrible. Guilty for sure.
I think
so. You know, it'd be interesting on this case especially to see what the listeners think.
I would love to. Yeah. And if people are like, y'all are stupid and you haven't looked at this or that, I don't care. You can call us names all day. It doesn't bother me none. She's guilty. And I am serious. I don't know why they're not taking care of their business in Texas.
And before you call us stupid, just think of why you feel that way. And come back with something that'd make us say, oh,
like
okay.
Actual evidence.
Yeah. Oh, well, maybe we are sort of dumb.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Not suppositions. No. Not like actual evidence.
Yep.
Because remember, I started out leaning toward innocence.
I did too.
And then the more fence. I dug in.
Yeah.
Especially guilty her testimony. Sure. Her testimony sealed it for me.
Did you say, I can't remember, did she have more appeals?
No, I don't think
she's
so.
She's done, I think.
Yeah.
So I don't, and it's been 30 years, a little over 32, I think.
Well, it's 1996.
Why is she still on death row?
I don't know. I don't know.
It's unusual.
If anybody knows why she's not been executed, I would love to know.
Because Texas is pretty clear about that.
Texas takes care of their business. Mm-hmm. I don't know why this business hasn't been taken care of.
Yeah. Maybe because she's a woman. I mean, I don't know.
Yeah.
They tend to go a little slower on women.
Really?
I think so.
Hmm. I could see that.
I could too.
Weird. Nah, kill them.
Yeah. Kill them. Especially they kill their children. If they have death row, that's a horrible case. Yeah.
Handle your business. Mm-hmm. You know, actually, I don't mind the appeals and making sure someone that is guilty is on death row.
Yeah.
To me, the greatest tragedy other than the victim would be an innocent person being killed for a crime they didn't commit.
Yep.
So that actually doesn't bother me, but we're way past what's normal in Texas. Mm-hmm. And I would just appreciate if someone would just handle their business.
Their business. You know, right. It probably would be handled too, if you think about it, Sherry, by the inmates. But since she's in solitary all the time.
Because mm-hmm, death row.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, be smart, be rude, don't be a victim. Outline of a Murder is a Mr. Joseph production. What do you think, Joseph?